to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I prefer to think of it, Dear John and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers answer your questions, give you dubious advice, and bring you all the week's news from both Mars and AFC Wimbledon.
But this week with a slightly different take.
You know, we love, at this podcast, we love Ryan's. We love Ryan's too much. I'm not sure exactly why we love Ryan so much, but we sure do.
Yeah.
And we never really thought to ourselves, what if we had like a guest? Well, sometimes we have, like, when you're not there or I'm not there, we have, like, fill-ins.
Right.
But we never really have guests.
Right.
But I thought maybe we could get a Ryan.
Yeah.
To be, like, Dear Hank and John and Ryan.
Yeah. And I am Ryan, not to be nervous about this, but not to take the dad joke duties, but we are joined today by noted Canadian actor, entrepreneur.
I know this sounds like a joke.
And
it sounds like we're making a joke.
We're not making a joke. Ryan Reynolds is here.
Oh, I had no idea this wasn't on video. I had my lips done. you'll never get to see that.
Yeah.
Hi guys.
Hello.
I love that Blake just you sort of said, I'll leave you in a second to your precious Anthropocene Reviewed podcast. I said, I'm not doing the Anthropocene Reviewed podcast. They don't have guests.
They don't even make episodes of that anymore.
No, it got canceled.
Yeah. I know what that's like, though. I have the same relationship with Sarah, the media that I listen to, that Sarah engages with, where she's like, whatever, John. Just go in the corner.
Last night, Catherine said to me, why are you going to be on Ryan Reynolds' podcast? And I was like, I have amazing news.
So we're so pleased to be joined by our special guest, Ryan Reynolds. And I wanted to begin, Ryan, if I could, by asking you a question from a listener called Cassie, who writes, Dear John and Hank, at any given time, when I look up at the sky, how much of the sky am I actually seeing? Like, from my vantage point, it looks like almost exactly half. But that can't be right, can it? Keep it classy, Cassie.
Wow. That's a remarkably thoughtful question.
Yeah. I mean, the bad news for Ryan is that I know the answer. And so if he gets it wrong, I'm going to have to tell him. did you know you were coming on a quiz show?
I don't even know. How do you measure sky?
Yeah.
Like it's not hectares, right? It's what is it?
Yeah. What is the sky, Hank? I don't even really know. Like, we've talked before about where does the sky start?
What unit of measurement would you use?
Well,
yes.
It's got to be mathematical, right? Because there is, you are right that it's not an area because of how it does not have a plane to it. So it kind of, and in the nighttime, it extends out, you know, roughly 13.7 billion light years. So that's a problem for
us. It's big. There's a lot of sky at night.
So the thing you would be measuring is angles. So, like, is it 180 degrees?
Or is it less than or more than
180 degrees?
You're going to rest on your angles, laurels. All right. Yeah. Okay.
You're telling me that the Earth is round?
Wait a second.
No, I mean, yes, but it wouldn't have to be to still measure it in angles.
No, man. I saw this YouTube video that got into this in detail.
I don't like this. this is terrible news for me.
Oh,
no.
Hank, how much of the sky can you see?
Well, it depends on where you are. If you are where I am, you can't see 180 degrees because there's mountains all around me. If there's buildings all around you, of course, you have a similar problem. But if you are on a perfectly flat plane, like say you're in the ocean on a boat, you can see slightly more than 180 degrees because the Earth is round. The higher up you are, the more you can see, the more sky there is. And then as you like take off in a shuttle and go farther and farther away, like if you're in a rocket ship going away from Earth, that angle continues to decrease until eventually the sky is everything except for a tiny dot that is the Earth. So that's how it works.
Whoa.
It's lonely.
You just blew my mind a little bit.
It's really lonely.
Yeah.
Why does the sky look different in certain places? Have you ever been, like, you know, if you go to, like, Africa, if you look at the sky, you're like, that's a different looking sky.
That's not the
same sky.
The one
I grew up with in Canada. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I live in Montana. Everybody calls it the big sky state. And I'm like, well, technically it's the same size.
Yeah.
but it does feel bigger. I mean, is that just an optical illusion?
Hank's version makes a terrible license plate.
Yeah, no, it does get me in trouble with the fellow Montanans.
Technically, yeah. It's the same sky state. Is a great license plate header.
Yeah, that's what mine says. I've gotten my Sharpie out and fixed it. I'm that kind of terrible pedant. And I just want everyone to know that.
I don't want to be pedantic, but I'm pretty sure that's pronounced pedant.
So musical.
Okay, John and Ryan, I have another question.
Great.
This one comes from Daisy, who asks, "Dear Hank and John, I think this is an important question. I just bought a cup of coffee, but I forgot to put milk and sugar in it. Is it socially acceptable to go back into the cafe 10 minutes later to add milk and sugar? I hate black coffee. Please help me." Not a Buchanan Daisy.
No.
I have this with bathrooms a lot.
Oh.
Where I've purchased something recently from a restaurant or some other.
I was a customer.
I was recently a customer, and I'm coming back for one reason.
Right. Because I have ulcerative colitis.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, I got a special card. You need to let me do this.
Yeah.
Which bathroom's the most sterile? I need to do a procedure in there that is going to... I always think that, like, Daisy, this is a good question, but I always think that, like, you got to just drive it like you own it. Like, you just got to go back and you just do it. If you don't act like there's anything wrong, they won't either.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
This is the con man 101 is what Ryan Reynolds is teaching
this
you.
This is the short con. This is an easy one. I mean, that was the name of the bathroom. It's like, I'm using the bathroom. I'm a paying customer.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And most folks are conflict averse. You know, most people don't want to engage in conflict. Most people have not been trained in conflict resolution. So if you've got that under your belt, you're covered on both ankles.
Yeah.
So I think just go back and do it.
Where do we get trained in conflict resolution? Is that something that happens like in like year two of Hollywood Celebrity? They're like, hey, so we got a course you need to take.
God, wouldn't that be nice? Boy, howdy. I did study conflict resolution and it's helped.
I know some working actors who have obviously not had conflict resolution.
No. Yeah, I feel like conflict resolution is like a life hack.
Yeah.
They should teach that in school, because I took a workshop in it when I was in my late 20s, and man, I have used that every day of my life since.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But it does speak to how profoundly conflict avoidant we are, that we think to ourselves, oh, I really shouldn't go back to this cafe where I bought a cup of coffee 10 minutes ago because I am so worried about the potential conflict of, you know, people thinking I'm pouring milk into coffee I didn't buy here.
Yes.
Yeah. And John, by the way, would never do that. You would never go back into a coffee place.
Because I'm so conflict avoidant, which is now I'm realizing that what I need is conflict resolution workshopping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just go in there, mirror, empathize, and validate someone, and you'll make their day and yours.
Okay, we're gonna have to start charging for Ryan Reynolds' course.
I was gonna say,
resolution.
I feel like I just got it. I feel like I don't need to go to the training now. I just mirror, empathize, and what's the last one? Validate.
Yeah, it's great. I'm telling you, it's a life hack. It's been very useful life.
Just
hack,
thinking about this makes me nervous.
Why?
Not me.
Oh, because I'm imagining a conflict that I might be in.
Oh, well, if you imagine a conflict, I can walk you through it. It's the easiest thing in the world. You're gonna mirror, empathize, and validate someone. So like, if you know, if John says, hey, I'm really pissed off, like, you know, you came back into my coffee shop and you went and you used the bathroom and you didn't flush the toilet, and you know, you're not even a paying customer, you can be like, well, you can mirror that. You can say, yeah, I came into your coffee shop and I did this thing. I'm very excited. And I imagine that did not feel good for you. I mean, I imagine there's still, you know, a lot of people paying customers, people waiting here and stuff like that. And now the bathroom's not there. And then that's when you say, I can imagine that would be difficult for you, John. So you're not really, in a weird way, you're not like admitting you've done anything wrong. All you're doing is sharing their perspective, mirroring it back to them,
right,
and validating that it is viable, that it's a viable perspective.
Real thing.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then you really actually don't even have to be like, I did something wrong, or say something like that, because you didn't necessarily. Your experience is yours and theirs is theirs.
Right.
Wow. Well, I didn't know I was going to get conflict resolution therapy today, but I'm very grateful that I did.
I didn't know. You will cut that whole section out of this, I promise you.
Oh, are you? No, we won't. No, we won't even cut you telling us to cut it.
Yeah, good.
that's the best.
I love how you guys roll.
Ryan, I have a Ryan-specific question for you. This one comes from Hank, who asks, what are you doing on our What are you doing on our podcast?
Why did you come on our podcast?
Oh,
so nice
fan.
Of you, but it's very surprising.
Yeah.
Big fan of both of you. John, you were very kind to chat with me a couple years ago on a Football Matters.
Great conversation.
Among other things, your dulcet voice just soothed me.
This was before it became public knowledge that Ryan and his friend Rob have become the owners of Wrexham, a team that plays in Wales in the fifth division of English soccer. And we talked about the perils and opportunities of loving lower tier English football teams.
Wow, that is a weird thing to have in common with a person, but love it for you both.
But everything John said resonated, and every piece of advice you gave me, I feel like I've put to good use. I'm gonna digitally pat myself on the back here. I'm literally doing it. You can hear it.
That's sounds great.
I took every piece of advice you gave me, and I think I put it to good use. That has been incredible. And then you know, and I'm a massive Anthropocene fan. I love the Auld Lang Syne episode. That Hank, have you ever heard that one?
Yeah, of course.
Auld Lang Syne. Yes. Okay. That one, I gotta say, for like just pound for pound, I think it's like 24 minutes long. It's probably the most emotional podcast I've ever heard. I think I've sent it to everyone. Basically, any hotshot actor I've ever worked with has listened to that.
Oh, well, thank you for doing that. That's very kind of you.
It just kind of, yeah, that one just gets me. And then Hank, a big, huge fan of everything you do to promote and genuinely care for science. I have to say I'm a huge fan. I know that this took a much more serious tone than you were thinking. I was just going to crap all over you both, but that's just not going to happen. I'll wait till we stop recording.
Great, perfect.
I'm a huge fan of both you guys. And then I often I'll just find myself, you know, on a walk, like I'll walk the kids to school and I'll be on my way back and I'll be listening to one of you guys doing something. And I often think to myself, like, how do they come up with the billing order here? Like, is it Hank and John, John and Hank? Like, if they added a rooster, it could be John Hancock, which would be a good name for a show. You know,
that's
like,
a great
how
idea.
Does that go down? Like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but then you're stuck with a rooster. You know?
Well, I mean, they only live so long.
Yeah, and he's probably a method actor and he'll never get out of character.
No,
and
for
yeah,
sure, 100%.
Won't be just a regular dude. He's constantly trying to act like a rooster.
Yeah.
It is a source of considerable consternation, the question of, is it Hank and John or John and Hank? I think that Hank and I have somewhat different worldviews on the topic.
Look, I think Hank and John just sounds better.
Mm.
And it's alphabetical. I think that's an argument in favor of it. I was born first. So I have to confess, think of it as John and Hank. But to mirror, empathize, and validate,
well done.
I'm hearing that, Hank, you feel like Hank and John sounds better.
Yeah.
And I can absolutely understand why that would make you feel more comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And I understand why, from your perspective, that is important.
It was textbook, John.
Thank you.
Textbook.
Thank you. No, I mean, you.
Yeah, we like
the Jungian freak out there jumping for joy right now. That was really amazing.
You've really changed my life. This is it moving forward. This is my only strategy.
Right?
I think I got it.
May this feed and nurture all your relationships.
There you go.
Wow.
You
Hank and John sounds better, I gotta say. I don't mean to pick a lane here.
Conflict resolved.
John Hank is like more work for me personally.
Yeah. I hear it. Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't suggest preference in any way, shape, or form, but Hank and John just sort of rolls off the tongue a little bit easier.
Well, now we have one additional vote. There are only three of us, so I guess we know that is also really rolls off the tongue.
So does John Hancock. I think he really does also.
And it's not hard to get a rooster in Montana.
No.
They're available.
Please.
I have a rooster.
Please. I'm wearing one right now.
I've already got one. And I can't believe that I failed to name the rooster John Hancock.
Right?
What a massive mistake.
Yeah. Fail. Huge fail.
Oh, but no, the kids have already named the rooster, so there's no going back from it.
Do you actually have a rooster?
He does. Yeah,
I do. Yeah, no.
I have chickens, but I don't have a rooster. I why would you do that to yourself? This isn't just
if
like
if you get to a certain level, you're supposed. If you have a certain number of chickens, you're supposed to have one rooster. I don't know why, but you're that's
the
what
rules.
My parents said
the chicken rules.
So
some sort of poultry sexism is going to come into play there, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know how it works.
No.
I shouldn't say that they're really my chickens when they live with my parents.
Oh, I was wondering. I was like, you don't have chickens.
No. Yeah.
Well,
I mean, they are next door.
Join ownership. Yeah.
I look at the chickens all day.
A lot. Yeah, your kids take care of the chickens. They're kind of
your chickens. I can see them from where I'm speaking to you.
Chickens are good for kids, though, because it gives the responsibility. Yes. They're more work than you'd think. Chickens.
Oh, yeah. They're great. I think they're great for kids, and they're not inside, which is really nice for me.
Yes.
They can be.
We had them inside for a while, though, when they were babies.
Oh, yeah.
And that was just disgusting. I mean, good God.
Well, some people put their chickens in diapers and have inside chickens, but that's never going to be us.
Wow. Because they're crap factories. I mean, they're literally
they just never stop pooping.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of my time is spent in very close proximity with chicken poop wearing an N95 mask.
Yeah, right. I want an N100 where there's just no air at all and I just asphyxiate. You got to make one of those.
If you're near chicken poop, for sure.
So here's a weird thing about what it's like to be you. Mm. I went through the Dear Hank and John questions inbox, which has existed since, I think, 2016. Mm. And I just searched for your name. And we had about 20 questions that referenced you specifically. So inside of this little episode of Dear Hank and John, I'm going to sprinkle a few of those. And here's the first one. It is from Abby, who says, "Dear Hank and John, and I had no idea that Ryan Reynolds was going to be listening to this question, so keep that in mind. Mm. I know the difference between Ryan Reynolds and Ryan Gosling, but every time I try to picture one of them in my head, I see their faces blurred together into a hybrid Ryan, possibly named Ryan Gosnalds. Is there a solution to this problem, Abby?"
You know, it's funny. Years ago, I used to play fast and loose a little bit more on Twitter. These days, I'm a little bit more reserved.
Yeah.
But I remember a question like this came up. It said, "I can't tell the difference between Ryan Reynolds and Ryan Gosling." And I answered the question. I said I would never do this today. But I answered the question. I said, "Well, the difference is easy to spot. Ryan Gosling has blonde hair, and Ryan Reynolds is a."
Oh, good. Good. We get a bleep for the episode. Don't worry about that. What that word was, everyone.
No, yeah, we'll be fine.
I have always remembered it this way. Ryan Reynolds is a Canadian, and Ryan Gosling is a very small goose.
There you are. Nailed it.
I don't have a hard time with this because I closed my eyes and I picture Ryan Reynolds starring in The Notebook and it all, I'm like, nah, that wouldn't happen.
No way. No, that would have failed horrendously.
Yeah, I guess that's it is a different vibe, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you would have brought a very different energy. It would have, I don't know if it would have been a better film or a worse film, but it would have been a different film.
Yeah. It would have been worse, I promise you. It would have been unwatchable. It would have been the theaters would have just said, "How many walkouts today?" 100%.
It would have been funnier. You just bring a different energy to it.
Yeah. Did you start your career on Disney's The Mickey Mouse Club, or was that Ryan Gosling?
It was Ryan Gosling. You were suffering from the same issue that Abby had. Okay. Yeah, no, that was me at all. I did start, like Ryan Gosling, I did start at a very young age. I didn't do anything as sort of notable as the Mickey Mouse Club. I did a bad sort of soap opera for teens called 15 for Nickelodeon. And I remember they paid me $250 a week. And I was like, I thought I was the richest man on earth because I also had a paper route, which I wasn't allowed to quit. And this paid like three times what my paper route paid.
Whoa.
It was incredible.
I mean, and also, a little less physical activity. But also, in addition to that, I now think you're very old.
Mm-hmm. I am.
Now I think you're 85 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nope. When did paper route stop?
When did you have a paper route? In 1961?
Is that still a thing in Canada?
I had a paper route in, it would have been 1990.
Oh my God.
I would guess. Okay. I was born in 1976. I am currently 45 years old.
I feel like I'm having a moment right now where I'm Bella and I'm saying to Edward Cullen, "How old are you?" And Edward Cullen's like, "I'm 16." And I'm like, "How long have you been 16? Yeah. And then Edward Cullen's like, "A while."
Oh God. Did you just throw down a Twilight reference? Good Lord, John.
Yeah, no, I have the whole movie memorized. Any, wow. You need any Twilight quotes, I'm your man.
Thank you.
Thank you for telling me all of us about 15, by the way. I'm excited to look it up.
I'm excited to go watch some 15 clips on YouTube.
You're so welcome. Yeah, it was very, yeah, it was good times. So that was to me a big job. I'd made it. And then only to like a year later, basically, you know, quit acting altogether and, you know, try to finish high school. And I ended up working as a busboy and working at a grocery store called Safeway.
Yeah.
And those are the jobs that I think I look back at as probably one of the most fun jobs I ever had was working at Safeway.
Oh, that is not how I feel about my time at Walmart.
No, you worked at Walmart.
Yeah.
Also not how I feel about my time at Steak and Shake.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Steak and a shake?
Yeah.
Did they make steak shakes?
No, and they don't actually make steaks either. No, they just make hamburgers. Yeah. It's a little misleading.
I never thought about that.
It was a great place to, I worked the graveyard shift, and so I got a lot of good stories out of it. Yeah, it's just, it was hard.
It's hard work.
Hard work. Yeah. Do people ever walk up to you, Ryan, and say something because they recognize you, but they recognize you as the wrong person?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I get this.
Or do they always recognize you as you?
No, there's a pizza place in the East Village of New York that I've been going to for years that they believe I'm Ben Affleck, and I've never corrected them. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I have a few things like that.
Years.
Yeah.
If you don't do a good job of correcting people immediately, it becomes a situation where you can never correct them.
Oh, you can't do it after that.
Yeah, I feel like it would not go over well if I, you know, revealed.
Well, and that's, yeah, they've been telling their friends for so long that Ben Affleck comes in all the time, and now they're going to have to like issue a correction.
Yeah.
That's no good.
I also don't accept anything. Like, they're not giving me free pizza based on this factor. And I do everything normal like everybody else. They just think I'm Ben Affleck, and you know they'll ask how J-Lo is. And I'll be like, great, it's all good. You know, pizza, and off I go.
That's where all of the Us Weekly news comes from.
Yeah,
you're the
main source for Ben Affleck related.
Yeah,
Us Weekly news
incorrectly leaking information. Yeah.
But I think makes it so believable with them is that I look mildly sort of put out
by the fact that
they're asking me again, like about my life and the movies, and I sort of look like, yeah, they're like, I think they sort of think, I don't think Ben Affleck's amused by us and our questions.
Now you're ruining Ben Affleck's reputation.
Yeah, I gotta be more chipper. That's
you've got somebody else on the line here. You gotta watch out.
Yeah, exactly. I gotta take care of Ben.
Okay, I've got an acting question that is for I think all of us, because as I don't know if y'all know this, but I am also an actor because I had a cameo in The Fault in Our Stars that was cut from the film due to performance issues.
Oh no!
I've seen it. It's in the deleted scenes.
It's not good.
I understand why they cut it.
Yeah.
Love you, John.
You could fill a thousand gymnasiums with writers who've been cut from movies.
We're so bad.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this question is from Bergen, who writes, "Dear John and Hank and Ryan, yesterday I had an audition, and although I had prepared in advance, when I got there, I realized that I really wasn't prepared, and I completely forgot everything I knew, and I seriously bombed the audition, and today I am overwhelmed with mortification and can't stop thinking through everything I should have done better. Mostly, I feel as though I made a humiliating first impression on people whose opinions really matter to me. Any advice on how to forgive myself for this screw-up and move forward? Doesn't rhyme with sturgeon.
Bergen.
I did it right the first time.
Bergen. Oh man. I mean, auditions are horrible.
Yeah.
Auditions are terrible places. Because like it's just straight up evaluation. It's not even observation. It's just evaluation. Like and anytime you're being evaluated by somebody, it's an act of hostility. So I feel for you, Bergen. I understand that. And that's I couldn't tell you. 80% of the auditions I ever did, I bombed. And the other 19% were awful. So I don't, you know, that's just the nature of the beast. You got to get comfortable. I would say get comfortable with rejection, with lots and lots of rejection. I always wonder, like, You know, like lately there's been a lot of talk. I mean, at least I've seen been exposed to a lot of talk because I guess my algorithms, but of like method actors. I always wonder, like, how do method actors audition?
What, did you read that same profile that I read?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I did read that profile.
Yeah.
And I've worked with some method actors, and I do understand both sides of it. I mean, I understand that one's process is one's process, but the issue I sometimes take with like method acting is that like, okay, now your process has to be all of our process.
Right,
like,
right.
At lunch, we're going to be like, I'm going to be like scooping out some Greek salad from the buffet table, and you're still going to give me the hairy eyeball across the way because your character doesn't like my character. I mean, it's just,
right.
It's just insane.
Now I'm here.
Yeah.
You've brought me in. This is not a choice that only affects you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would not have imagined
that's
that.
That's the thing I always find out.
But I would imagine, having failed spectacularly as an actor myself, that it is really hard for some people to feel like they are inside of the character. And if they can't turn that off, that must be difficult for them. But you're absolutely right. Like, it affects other people. And that's what's so hard about the collaborative environment of making a play or a movie or whatever, is that sure. It is, unless you're making a one-man show that you're also directing.
Yeah.
It is an inherently collaborative process.
Well, it's also part of what's so wonderful about it. Not that I know. I've watched a lot of my friends are in theater, and it's just so like the opportunity to lean on each other is really great. But it does mean that, you know, everybody has to be there to lean on. The thing that is brought up in this question that I think is really poignant is like, you've identified what actually feels bad about this, which is that a lot of people who you respect, you are imagining that they are thinking less of you.
Mm.
And that may be to some extent true, but probably it's much less true than it feels to you. Like, probably everybody in that room has bombed an audition, and they've certainly seen lots of people bomb auditions, or whether or not you actually bombed it, you know, perform less well than they had anticipated they would.
Yeah.
And so they are probably thinking about it a lot less than you are.
Well, I've also spent a lot of time on the other side of that.
Yeah.
You know, where I've movies I've produced, and you're in these auditions, and I can only speak to the experience that I've been in the rooms that I've been in, but myself, the casting director, the director, maybe there's additional producers or writers in the room as well. We're all like desperately rooting for these folks that are coming in and bearing their soul and heart. And we all sort of understand how challenging it is. So like, I mean, I know I work really hard to make sure that the person who's reading is extremely comfortable. But I remember lots of auditions where I had an audition. One of the first ones I had was for a casting director, and he never looked up. He never looked up at me. It was such an odd thing. And especially, it goes full circle because I guess about 3 months later, I got this pilot for a sitcom, and I loved doing sitcoms. Still one of the best jobs I ever had. Live audience, you know, lots of fun, lots of writing in the moment, which I always love. And I remember we did this pilot, and the pilot was okay. But, you know, I loved the role I had. I remember this same guy came up to me and said, "I would love to have a meeting with you at some point." And I said, "Oh no, we met." "We've never met." And I was like, "No, we met on, I met you on a project. It was called Enemies. And it was a sitcom. And I read for you. And I was 3 weeks ago. Look at your charter or whatever you had. I was there." And he didn't remember. And I remember that was just an ouch.
That was, well, maybe he was having a real bad. Now I'm being empathetic to the unempathetic guy. This is my problem.
Yeah, he may have. He may have been going through. Everyone's got their own little bag of rocks there, Karen.
which reminds me that this podcast is brought to you by Everybody's Little Bag of Rocks.
Yep.
Everybody's Little Bag of Rocks.
We all got them.
We got them, and we don't know where they are. And sometimes they just rub us, and we didn't even know that they were there.
Yeah.
And that is not comfortable.
Wonderful sponsor.
Great sponsor. Very appreciative for their support. Of course, today's podcast is also sponsored by Aviation Gin. Aviation Gin. my number one source of gin.
Oh.
Are you looking for a beautiful, smooth gin and an open checkbook? Well, hey, Aviation Gin is the sponsor of this podcast. That's for sure.
This podcast is also brought to you by Ryan Gosling's Conflict Resolution Course. It's available on its masterclass. Yeah.
And of course, today's podcast is brought to you by Ben Affleck's favorite pizza joint. Ben Affleck's favorite pizza joint. And things are going great with J-Lo. Thanks for asking.
When I first started out, I was in an improv comedy group. We used to do like fake pharmaceutical ads. Because those are like great names. Like, you know, are you tired of feeling your life? Are you tired of blinking? Well, maybe, you know, and it'll be like, Ampervir is for you, you know, and then like the list of side effects were always so hard because they would speak so fast, but I always loved that one of the side effects would be clay colored stool.
Yeah.
Maybe that's loading spontaneous death or clay colored stool.
And they always try to end it on one that isn't death.
Yeah, which just throw death
always,
in the middle.
I always find that so funny in those ads where like they squeeze death in right in the middle as if it's sort of like one of the less interesting things that can happen as a result of taking Cymbalta.
Ooh.
It causes explosive strength. Wait, what? Did you just say explosive strength?
Oh,
we have a Project for Awesome message also from Maury, Hyattsville in Hyattsville, Maryland. I'm not sure. To Greta and Toby. Hey, look, you guys, your name is on a podcast. Hank and John, thank you for making a podcast that I can share with people in my life and generally just making the world a better place. Ryan, we have a Project for Awesome is a charity event and people can buy little sponsorships for donations.
So thank you, Maury, for buying a sponsorship.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
What an episode you picked.
The episode.
I want to ask you another Ryan-specific question, if I might. This one is, I think, A++ solid gold. It's from Anonymous, who writes, Dear John and Hank, although not that anonymous, Dear John and Hank, I am faced with a conundrum. I have fallen in love with a really wonderful man, and we are engaged to be married. There is just one problem. His name is Ryan Reynolds.
Oh my God.
Now, I don't want to be mean to Ryan Reynolds, the famous movie actor, but my Ryan is the better Ryan. Oh, Anonymous, if only you'd known.
Wow.
My Ryan is the better Ryan. Regardless, I now have had a 2-year lovely relationship in which I have had to explain, no, not that Ryan Reynolds, many, many times. And now I realize that I am signing up for a lifetime of it. I'm not going to let this hold me back from the marriage, but any advice on how to handle a lifetime of explaining that I am not married to a very famous Canadian would be welcome, Anonymous.
Wow.
I was so pleased when I came across this.
I will say this, Anonymous. I will say this, you know, the cultural landscape moves fast, you know, so I'm on a sabbatical right now. Like I'm not shooting a movie for another year and a half. No one's going to know who the hell I am in like an hour. So I think you're also like, let's be grateful for a second here. Not because you're marrying a guy named Ryan Reynolds, but like, it could be so much worse. She could be marrying like a guy named like Glenn Mussolini or, you know, Shirley Wayne Gacy or some, you know, like this would be horrible. And you know, at least as far as we know, I'm not a murderer.
That is very true.
In my younger years, I knew in Chicago a guy named Lance Armstrong, and what a journey he's been on. Because when I knew him, he was like, yes, it's me, Lance Armstrong, not the Tour de France champion. But now he's like, yes, it's me, Lance Armstrong, not the disgraced Tour de France champion.
I
often think about this because I have such a common name and there are so many John Greens I often feel like I'm inconveniencing some of them.
Yeah.
And I do feel a little guilty about it. Like there's a John Green who's a wonderful author of graphic novels and comic books. And he had to he changed his author name to John Patrick Green recently and immediately hit the New York Times bestseller list. And I was like, oh, well, now maybe I need to change my name in turn.
John Copernicus Green. You got to just bring it up. Just go for it.
I do. Yeah. No, my parents, of course, gave me the middle name Michael as part of their efforts to make sure that I was as anonymous as possible.
This, you know what this kid loved? Privacy.
Yeah. And then you're like, no, I think instead I will become the most famous John Green. And
Are there any other Hank Greens?
Oh, yes.
There are. Actually, because I read this question yesterday, I looked it up and there's a number of them. And also, this is actually what it was. I was on Twitter and somebody tagged me. There is a Hank Green who is the VP of food and beverages at AMC Theaters.
Wow.
And he's giving a talk soon. And so that's why he came across my dashboard.
Good for him.
AMC Food and Beverages?
Yeah.
The movie chain.
Yeah.
I thought I was talking to him today.
That's why I wanted to come on the podcast trying to sell my products to AMC Theater.
This was a work call.
Yeah. I'm just trying to shore up that relationship with Hank Green, head of food and beverage.
This is a relationship business, guys.
Have you heard any of the other Ryan Reynoldses? Have you ever come across another Ryan Reynolds?
Not too. I mean, I'm a Ryan Rodney Reynolds.
That's very rare.
My middle name is Rodney. I'm definitely a guy who drives a panel van. I've never met a Ryan Reynolds, but I knew that there was a Ryan Reynolds who was a big time college football player. I think he played for the Sooners. And he played maybe 10 years ago or so. He was really good. He's probably still really good, just not playing for the Sooners anymore. But otherwise, no, I don't think I've ever met a Ryan Reynolds.
Well, there is one who is about to get married.
Yeah.
Well, I think that this question was from a long time ago. So
perhaps they're happily married now.
Well, I hope so, too. Yeah. I did recently join LinkedIn, and there are quite a number of Ryan Reynolds on there as well.
Wow.
Also, my social media handles are Van City Reynolds, which is from Vancouver, because my name was taken on every platform. So I just went with Van City.
Yeah.
For some reason, I always thought that was a... I have seen this handle, and I thought that was some reference to a large city of vans.
Mm.
Like, just out in the desert, just a bunch of vans hanging out, like a Pixar movie.
like a tent city, but it's, but vans. No, yeah, it's not like Nomadland sequel. That eagerly anticipated Nomadland
Van
sequel.
City.
What I'm doing, yeah.
I thought the cliffhanger ending was incredible.
Right?
I mean, I don't know which way they're going to go with it.
I can't believe they said that whole movie was just an ad for part two.
It's a really good movie, though.
It was a really good movie.
I don't usually like good movies, like properly good movies, but I really liked that one.
Yeah, I don't like to learn about anything, and I felt like I learned watching that one.
Yeah.
Felt like I was a better person when the credits rolled.
Yeah, a little more emotionally engaged, for sure.
100%. Yeah, totally.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
You've never seen Nomadland?
You've never seen
it? It won like 73 Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I don't watch... No,
you
don't
like
watch
me, you don't watch a lot of good movies.
If there isn't an MTV Movie Award Best Kiss in it, Hank has nothing to do with it. He doesn't even...
Exact. Correct. Yeah. You've uncovered my secret.
Yeah.
This is how I make my decisions.
It's the most prestigious award that I've ever received is an MTV. That's as high as I've gotten so far.
Yeah.
Got that popcorn.
I think I actually had to pay my own $300 to get the popcorn.
Well, look, you got the popcorn.
Come on, yeah, you got the charge for that.
I think I don't want to be quoted on that because I might be wrong, but that's my memory. Mm-hmm. All right, we have another question from Kelsey, who writes, "Dear Ryan and John and Hank, who decides which books become movies? Is there like somebody employed at every major film company whose only job is to read books and decide whether or not it should become a movie? Books and blockbusters, Kelsey."
Oh God!
If only it were that simple.
You've asked the right group of people.
Yeah, I'll say. I do know that they must have the thickest of skin, because it's not too often that present company excluded that works out, right?
Like, it almost never works out. Even present company included.
I don't know.
What happens usually, Kelsey, is that either an actor or a producer, somebody who puts movies together, usually options the rights to make a book into a movie. And then with those rights, either works with a movie studio or with a production company of some kind to try to get a script written. And then they try to get a movie studio to greenlight the script, perhaps already having found a director or some actors to help package it together as a unit. And then the movie gets made. So there are so many steps along the way, in my experience anyway.
Lots of people make decisions.
And
like it's down to so many different people.
Sometimes even then it doesn't happen. I mean, I remember there was a book by John Kennedy Toole called A Confederacy of Dunces, and that was adapted 6 ways from Sunday. Every person was attached to it at different points. It all came together with directors and budgets and all that kind of stuff, and it would always fall apart. And I think it always fell apart because the principals involved would then read the book and go, oh, we can't do this. What are we, insane?
This can't be a movie.
Yeah.
But that's a great example where I think the first actor associated with the Confederacy of Dunces project was Paul Newman. You know,
was that true?
I think so. And at some point, I know Will Ferrell was attached to it.
Will Ferrell, Drew Barrymore was attached to it.
Every comic actor of the last 50 years has been attached to it at some point.
Candy was attached to it.
Yeah. Oh, and he would have been amazing. But again, it is unfilmable. So that I think that is perhaps the underlying issue.
It is unfilmable and also problematic in their current. I mean, it's just a
hugely problematic.
Point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
With my books, I mean, I've had usually when something gets greenlit and when the studio starts to spend a bunch of money, it happens. But my first novel, Looking for Alaska, was something like 20 or 25 days away from the start of production and was largely cast and, you know, people had moved their families to the place where it was going to film. And then it got canceled at the very last second. And I think that happens. But what usually happens is that somebody options the book. They try really hard to get a good script and it just never works.
Yeah.
And that happens. That's, I mean, 95% at least of the stuff that gets optioned never gets made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also just so expensive. I mean, think about how much what represents success for a book a lot of times is if it reaches, say, 50,000 people. Mm-hmm. That's a very successful book. But a film, even a small budget film, cannot reach 50,000 people and make money.
No. Yeah, there's a lot to consider.
The scale of it's just very different.
It is.
All right, Hank, we should probably get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, which I'm not sure that, strictly speaking, Ryan needs to join us for. But I do, before we get to the news from AFC Wimbledon and before we say thank you and goodbye to Ryan, I do want to say that down there in the fifth tier of English football, where AFC Wimbledon was not long ago, just a decade ago, AFC Wimbledon was trying to get out of the National League, which is one of the hardest things to do in English football because there's only two promotion slots.
Yes,
and
very tricky.
It's very tricky. And Wrexham, I believe, is currently in fifth. They've been working their way up. They had a rough start to the season, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. Ryan, and they've been working their way up. So
yeah, very correct. Yeah.
What's the current Wrexham vibe and mood?
I would say that the mood is never going to be good enough until we're promoted, I think.
Yeah.
But overall, I think that this has been embraced by the community. I think we've understood from the get-go, and certainly from talking to you, John, it was one of the things we talked about. It was really kind of making sure that this was an in-tandem project with both the club and the community mm-hmm. around it. So mm-hmm. it's been great. I mean, for us, it's been one of the most satisfying, wonderful things that I've ever been involved with, and also the most excruciating.
Yeah.
Football will quite literally just chew and blow bubbles with your soul, and it's a terrible feeling. And that roller coaster ride is something that I am still struggling with. Like, I actually struggle to watch the matches sometimes because I just find it
physically painful.
Yes. I'm physiologically inside out by the time it's done. Like, my bones are hanging outside of my ears and head and my spine is somewhere across the room. It's just an awful experience. So yes, it's both a curse and it's the beautiful game. You know, you understand why it is that. So I'm very, very lucky to be involved with Wrexham.
That's awesome. Well, we will be watching Wrexham throughout the rest of the season and hoping that promotion is on the cards for them.
May I ask how Wimbledon's doing right now? How is Wimbledon?
Well,
that's a storied project as well, which
it's amazing. Indeed. They just won a football game, which is wonderful.
Hey,
yes.
A big relief. I watched the game on my phone. We were playing Accrington Stanley, which is one of those team names that just sounds absolutely made up.
Yes.
But 100%. We were playing Accrington Stanley away up there in the north of England where the sky is very close to the ground. And I would say the wind was averaging about 55 miles per hour. The rain was lashing horizontally throughout the game. And from the moment it started, I was like, this has nil-nil written all over it. We have no chance of winning this game. And then we did the most disastrous thing for us this season, which is that we scored. And this season, when Wimbledon score first, they have lost almost every game. And when they give up the first goal, they are much more likely to win. Wow. And so the moment we scored, I was like, oh, this is a catastrophe.
Yeah.
But then we scored again. And I was like, I don't even know how this feels. We haven't had a 2-goal lead all season. And it felt great. It was extremely enjoyable. And then we ended up winning the game. So thank you to Luke McCormick and Ayub Bissall for giving me a wonderful week. And now we are way up in the... We are way up in 17th place in League One, well out of the relegation zone for the moment, which is just awesome.
League One. That's amazing, though. League One.
I know.
That's no joke.
I know. We can get there.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, we're
it's
on
amazing.
Our way.
Possible.
We're on our
the
way.
Third tier, League One.
I know.
It's been a sharp learning curve for me. All of the lingo.
Yeah.
The fact it's that League One is the third tier could not be more confusing.
Yes, that is true.
It's not even the second.
No.
One.
They don't make it easy.
No, not at all.
Hey, Hank, what's the news from Mars?
The news from Mars is I feel the same way about the James Webb Space Telescope as you guys do about football. And so I am, my bones are on the outside of my body. The James Webb Space Telescope has met its rocket. They are friends now. And they're going to hang out for a pretty long time until they're in space. So that's terrifying. And the launch is currently scheduled for the 22nd. And it's all I can think about. No offense, Mars, but I'm stuck on the James Webb Space Telescope frame. If you're wondering the sort of schedule of events, the launch is a scary time, but it remains scary for about a month, but really like 6 months even. So 2 weeks is the scariest time, then a month, then 6 months. So if you get through 2 weeks, then that's amazing. That's the amount of time it takes for the space telescope to unfold into its like full configuration. If it is unable to do that for some reason, it will not work. And it has a lot of moving parts, but they've all been tested extensively. And then a month is when it is in its stable orbit, where it arrives at the place where it's going to live for the whole of its mission. And then 6 months is when it actually starts to take pictures of space.
Okay.
So there's a long period of time of like calibration after it sort of is like open and on and doing its work. But we get what's called first light in like 6 months after launch. So it's a long period of sort of nerves, but the first 2 weeks are the most nervous time. Well, I should actually say that the launch is probably the most dangerous time. But so that's all I'm thinking about. Love you, Mars. I'll be back soon.
Yeah, I watched an 11-minute video about how the James Webb Space Telescope is going to launch and unfurl and everything, and my palms were drenched with sweat as I was watching it and thinking about it. It's a lot. It's so many years of the hard work of really smart, talented, dedicated people. And we just hope it goes well.
John, Ryan, thank you for podcasting with me. Thank you to everybody who sent in your questions to hankandjohn@gmail.com. You never know when an old one's going to get dug up.
That's right.
Because Ryan Reynolds is going to be on the podcast.
Indeed. And Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. And it's such a pleasure to be with you. Before we go, I have to tell you, my kids made me promise that I would say that they love Free Guy. I love it too.
Yes.
I have to love it because I've seen it 7 times, but they really, really love it. You know how kids love to rewatch movies, and it is like their number one choice right now. So thank you. Thank you for Free Guy. Henry and Alice, say hi.
That means the world to me. Tell your kids that means the world to me.
I will.
Because thank you, Henry and Alice. And my blood, sweat, and tears went into that one. We worked really, really hard on that one. It was kind of an antidote to the insane 4 or 5 years that we've had in the last little while. And I thank you for that. I really appreciate that.
Oh, it's a really fun movie. Thanks for making it.
Guys, thank you for having me on. Also, hit me up anytime someone cancels last minute.
All right, we will.
Because you're free all the time.
Well, no, I actually have that sort of thing with Jimmy Fallon. And I always love it. Like, if someone does cancel, I'm like, because I live in New York.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, that's fun.
It makes it fun.
Awesome. You know?
It's probably good advice for Bergen, our auditioning friend, to not think about it too much. Someone will show up out of nowhere and you just go to you, and then you're awesome.
That's right.
And if you have our contact info if you need us for anything. I don't know what you would need us for, but
I mean, if you ever need somebody to get cut out of a movie, I'm your guy.
I've needed you in the past. So. right? They're done.
We are off now to record our Patreon-only podcast, This Week in Stuff, which you can find at patreon.com/DearHankAndJohn. That was super fun.
That was fun. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tuna Medish. It's produced by Rosianna Hals Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Julia Bloom. Ryan's friend Sophia Travaglia helped a lot getting this all put together, so thanks to her.
Thank you, Sophia.
Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now is by the great Gunnarola, and as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.